Hi, everyone, and welcome to the inaugural Tracks in Time episode. I am your host and Freight Waves deputy editor, Brielle Jekyll, and I am here with Point of Sales, Grace Sharkey, who joins me for our first episode to help me tell the story of the 1978 Lufthansa. Hi, Grace.
Hi, so, excited to be here. This is awesome.
I know, this is such a fun story, so I'm ready to dive into it. So I'm sure most of you have at least heard of, or I'm sure most of you have seen or at least heard of the famous Martin Scorsese film Goodfellas. But did you know that it's actually based on a true story? And not all the characters are based on real people. They're mostly an amalgamation of different gangsters involved. But the exact storyline is a lot different too. But the heist that itself happens in the actual film follows a real life theft at JFK Airport in 1978. And at the time, it was the biggest heist in the United States history. So
that's wild. I didn't realize that was like that big. I didn't understand. I heard after I saw the movie, I found out that it was a true story, but I never even realized that it was that large of a theft.
It's funny because it's a small part of the movie, but it's a huge story and a huge piece of American history.
Yeah.
So right off the bat, I want to say most of our information used for today's episode is taken from the History Channel and very helpful people at the Mob Museum in Las Vegas. So thank you guys so much for the help. So first, Grace, have you ever seen the movie?
Yes. Oh, yeah, I've definitely seen the movie. The intro is like one of my favorite parts of a film I've ever seen. I mean, all-star cast as well, right? R.I.P. G. Ray. A wonderful movie overall. If anyone hasn't seen it, I haven't seen Die Hard. Mary O'Connell likes to give me a bunch of slack and won't need Die Hard, but this is a movie I think that out trumps that for sure.
I agree. I've seen Goodfellas like a million times and I have seen parts of Die Hard. Sorry, Mary.
Yeah.
So what do you remember about the heist?
So it's funny. I saw that question. And I was like, I haven't seen it in like at least 4 or 5 years. But the two things I do remember is beforehand, like, which is funny, like then in the bar watching the game and like coming up with a scheme beforehand. And then, and clearly he's in the shower. And then I think my favorite, like, other, besides the intro scene, my favorite scene is kind of the cleanup job, what they do at the end, where you just start finding these bodies all across New York. That's like one of my favorite parts of it, too. I don't know what that says about my personality, but I just remember that funny scene beforehand when they're like in the bar and just like thinking about a time in life, right, with like cell phones nowadays where like you could just be like mobsters in a bar watching a game and also coming up with apparently the biggest theft of all time during that time. So that's what I remember clearly from it, and then him hearing it on the news.
Right. Well, the real story is kind of even crazier. So I'll get into it. So the actual heist took place on December 11th in 1978. Employees working the night shift in JFK Airport at the Lufthansa cargo terminal, they've been caught by surprise when 6 men in ski masks rounded them up at gunpoint and forced most of them into the break room. So the manager was led to a storage vault and forced to disable the alarm. In just a little over 1 hour, the men stole 40 cartons full of 15 pounds of cash and jewels, $5 million in cash, which would be about $23 million today, and $1 million in jewelry. Two of the masked men escaped in a black van with the loot, while the rest of them took off in a Buick waiting nearby. They left at 4:21 a.m. and demanded that the hostages not call the authorities until 4:30. The hostages did as they were told, and they actually got away with it at first. So 2 days later, police found the black getaway van parked on the side of a street in Brooklyn. It was parked in front of a fire hydrant, not a joke. Fingerprints and even a footprint were found in the van, and they were a match to Parnell Stephen Edwards, better known as Stack. Quickly after the cops found the van, Stacks turned up dead, shot in the head while eating dinner. A piece of chicken still in his mouth. So those, that scene that you remember at the end, the cleanup, that happens.
No. Oh, well, man, that's funny.
At this point, the FBI knew that the information needed to successfully complete this heist had to have come from an insider and a supervisor at that. So they had their eyes set on Peter Grunewald, a supervisor for Lufthansa Cargo at JFK Airport. They became suspicious of Grunewald after he took a company trip to Germany the week directly after the heist. And he seemed like an easy man to break, and he definitely did. He testified against his coworker, Lewis Warmer, who was the inside man for the biggest heist anyone had ever seen in the United States. Warner was convicted, but he refused to name anyone else that worked the job, and he was the only one ever to actually be convicted for the Lufthansa heist. But our story doesn't end there. Finally, in 1980, Goodfellas main character, played by Ray Liotta, RIP, and real-life mobster Henry Hill, was arrested on 6 drug-related counts. Soon enough, he flipped on his friends and partners, and the world finally learned the true story behind the heist. Unfortunately, it was too late for most involved, since at least 8 men related to the job were found murdered. Remember Peter Grunewald, the Lufthansa worker that turned on his coworker as being the inside man for the job? Well, it turns out the entire heist started with him. He knew that the airline brought in unmarked cash from currency exchanges overseas from American tourists to JFK. The money would usually then be moved to banks by truck, but sometimes delays would mean that the cargo would be stored at the airport until the next business day. Seems like a perfect opportunity for theft.
Oh, for sure.
And Grunewald definitely thought that this would be the perfect chance to grab the hefty cargo, and so he brought this idea to his friend and coworker, Lewis Warner. Unfortunately, he chose the wrong partner, because Warner was under a massive mountain of debt to a big-time bookie in the area known as Martin Krugman. This is Goodfellas' Maury Kessler, played by Chuck Lowe, if you need a visual in your head. Warner thought that this was his chance to finally get free of his debt, and he stole the idea from his friend, and he took it to Krugman. From there, Ray Liotta, aka Henry Hill, enters the picture. The real Henry Hill was indeed a part of a gangster crew earning money in a bunch of not-so-legal ways. They worked closely with the Lucchese crime family, and this crew was run by Jimmy the Jet Burke, played by none other than Robert De Niro, better known in the film as Jimmy Conway. Remember him?
Oh, yeah.
Well, they were already familiar with stealing cash from JFK, because they were continually hijacking trucks full of merchandise, and they moved it for quick cash, and they knew how to do it very well. They loved the big heist idea, so they created a team. They knew it was going to be the biggest heist that the U.S. had ever seen, so they made a team full of the best guys that they knew. The group pulled off the heist, and it seemed like they got away with it. But the first mistake came that very night when the getaway driver, remember Stack, after the heist, he got drunk, and that's when he parked the van illegally in front of a fire hydrant, and he didn't take it to the scrapyard run by the mob that he was originally supposed to do. So he was the first body to show up connected to the robbery. Thankfully, no victims or hostages during the actual robbery were hurt, but the aftermath of those involved was gruesome. After Stack's death, the bodies grew, and they ended up with a total of at least 9 dead within 7 months after the robbery. Jimmy the Jet, or Robert De Niro, he started to get paranoid that members of the operation would rat on him. And at the same time, he got greedier and greedier for more shares of the loot. Krugman, that bookie who brought the idea to the crew, he started getting loud about wanting a larger cut since he brought the idea to them. And according to Hill, Jimmy the Gent and Angelo Seppi were the ones who shot the getaway driver, and then went on to kill Krugman because Jimmy was scared he would squeal. Well, when Werner was convicted in February after the robbery, Jimmy's paranoia only got worse. It's presumed that he killed his former cellmate, Louis Carfora, better known as Roast Beef, not a joke, who was a part of the heist. His wife as well, after Roast Beef roast beef, told her about, and bought her a custom pink Cadillac. They even drove it near the cargo area in JFK so he could brag to her about the job. Their bodies were never found. Two cargo thieves that worked with the crew and for Air France, they were questioned by the FBI and they refused to cooperate. But even still, they were both found shot execution style in a parked car. A month later, the body of Paolo Lacastri was found, and he was a Sicilian drug trafficker. He was the overseer of the heist for the Gambino crime family. It was his job to make sure that the crime family successfully got their $200,000 cut. So it's pretty clear that Jimmy Green, is probably the reason for his death.
Yeah.
I will spare you the details on how his body was found on that one because it's pretty gruesome. All you got to do is Google Paolo Lacastri if you really want to know. And then there were restaurant owners, Richard Eaton and Tom Montalio. And they were supposed to launder the stolen cash. And apparently they skimmed some money. And Eaton's body was found in a meat truck. Again, I'm going to spare you the details on that one because the way he was found, not ideal. And then the saddest part, the body of Teresa Farrar was also found. She wasn't even really involved in the theft. She was just an alleged mistress of somebody in on the robbery. So I guess trying to make sure all loose ends were tied up, Jimmy the Gent offed her too. And others related to the crime family and the crew also showed up dead throughout the following year for things like breaking the family code and the mob. And that made all those deaths and all that stuff going on made our Henry Hill super nervous that he was next. He figured that Jimmy would turn on him soon. And that's when he decided to enter witness protection and give up other gangsters, including his friends. And eventually, that's how we would learn the story that would eventually become Goodfellas. And so Jimmy the Gent was sentenced for the restaurant owner's murder and a college scheme in Boston, but not the Lufthansa Heights. And Paul Verrio, who was the capo of the Lucchese crime family, he was basically Jimmy's boss. He also went down for extortion of freight companies. And they both died cancer in prison. So that's basically the true story of Goodfellas.
It makes you think if they didn't go through and just panically murder everyone, if they would have maybe gotten away with it a little bit more. I mean, there definitely was evidence left behind. There's definitely, it was a sloppy job for such a large amount of money, but it does make you wonder if maybe you weren't so paranoid and killing up every single person in the circle.
It would have been as bad. That's a huge part of it. Getting super drunk and leaving the car in front of a fire hydrant, major red flag, surprise. And all of the information that they needed to pull off the heist was very clearly came from an inside job person. And there was only a limited number of supervisors who would know that information.
Crazy stuff. And it's and sometimes you get to say, you think, you kind of hope they get away with it, but then you realize how bad guys they were, and it's they didn't pull one over on the rest of us.
I know, I wasn't sure how to end it, if I should say, you know, unfortunately they died in prison from lung cancer, but actually it's probably good that they were able to spend such a long portion of their lives in prison for the horrible crimes that they've committed.
Exactly. This is crazy because they create such interesting characters, right? And then you find out the true story behind everything, and it really puts in a picture, okay, this is not just an incredible movie. This is a very sad story of crime and disruption of a family, that's for sure.
Right. Henry Hill actually ended up writing a book about the whole thing, and that's how the movie was made. I didn't take as much information from the book because people aren't sure whether how much is conjecture or what, so I made sure to stick with facts. But it's a wild story, and the deaths involved are pretty crazy. And it's, you know, you see it on your screen, but to actually realize that the mob, at least back then, did operate like it did, it is kind of shocking.
Well, and it's interesting too, because between like this story and the story, I can't remember what his name is, the story about the man that like stole the plane, right, and like jumped out in Washington. That's another one. But you forget how loose the airlines were security wise, right? Like, I wonder if even today you could potentially get to the facilities that they're able to get to without going through guards on guards on guards. I mean, there's when flight was first taking off, I mean, the airports, you could walk in with whatever you wanted and get on a plane and not have an issue. You just walk in and buy a ticket. Where now, even these days, they would find that suspicious, right? So it's interesting how security has probably helped bring down a lot of easy theft, right? To just pull boxes off of trucks or steal a truck's leaving these warehouses. I hope it's not as simple as it is today.
It definitely isn't. I mean, especially with technology and the tracking, if you have that as a trucking, you know, and a freight company. But I mean, remember the days when you could say goodbye to a family member at the gate? That's
exactly,
unheard of,
right?
And well, it turns out that we do have a lot of cargo theft happening. Last year, cargo theft spiked about 15% across the U.S. and Canada. And there was a huge surge during COVID as well because, you know, things were backed up and inventory was kind of left sitting around. So a lot of stuff was stolen then. And this report from Annoy, who wrote about the data from CargoNet in February, shows that an estimated 223 million dollars worth of goods were stolen across Canada and the U.S. So it's definitely still a problem. But I'm just wondering how much the mob is actually involved today.
Well, you know what is interesting to bring to the point of sale in this show too. I did an episode a few weeks ago on retail crime, and what's actually interesting too about it is laws have changed in a lot of states and federally for what is a misdemeanor and what is a felony when it comes to theft as well. And they've actually seen a huge uptick in crime when it comes to cargo theft too. You're right. They're finding it more and more between warehouses and movements between like distribution centers. But in a retail study, retailers came back saying that they found over the last year became 20, actually, I think it was between 2019 and 21, it became 26% more aggressive and organized. So to sit here and talk about, right, this mob aspect of it, it's easier for people to get away with the crimes a little bit more because, you're right, of all of this movement between distribution centers. You just have to kind of sit out and watch and see what's coming through. But it's becoming more aggressive and more organized. So this last year, they actually put together a law called the Combating Organized Crime Act of 2023. And it's supposed to put millions of dollars towards working with retailers to start eliminating some of these crimes and giving them more visibility and different resources to start combating it. Because even when someone like Target, a lot of these Fortune 500 companies, they reported had less than 10 people that were in charge of making sure crime and cargo wasn't being taken. So it's upticking, and I think that's, you know, there's part of inflation, right? People okay. Start to get behind on loans, things get more expensive, people are going to start trying to get items and resell items on the black market in ways that they can. So it's just interesting how even though this happened in the past, it's reoccurring again in some type of form.
Yeah, and I just want to say that it's ironic that we have this episode today because Lufthansa is actually on our front page today. Cargo chief von Boxberg is the cargo chief von Boxberg is she's set to run Brussels airline. So she's being reassigned. So that's big news today on FreightWaves.com.
Perfect timing. Yeah.
I know, right? And also, air cargo is actually not doing too well. You can take a look at a recent article from Eric Kolsip on March 16th, where it discusses that the air cargo market may not improve, even if the economy does.
Yeah, it's one of the most expensive ways to move freight right now. And it's, we talked about visibility. Yeah. It's actually one of the most difficult areas to come up with space quickly. There's a lot of planning, a lot of movement going on. So it is very expensive. So now, I mean, people are going to try to stick to rail, if anything, and truckload, right, to bring up another perfect article. Go check out Rachel Premack's Modes today.
Yeah,
rail's first thing you go to. Truckload's going to be second, and air cargo's going to be one of the last. So we'll see how that affects consumer passenger flying prices. But unfortunately, it's cost a lot for jet fuel compared to diesel or just running on rail at the end of the day.
Right. I mean, luckily, my flights to Florida next week weren't too bad.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. These little jumper flights.
Yeah. No, my little 2-hour flight isn't costing an arm and a leg. Not like Taylor Swift tickets are.
Yeah, exactly. I was not even talking about Beyonce tickets right now either, because that hurt a couple weeks back.
Yeah, I mean, it all hurts. I'm looking at even like my lesser known bands, and but that's besides the point. Yes, the whole industry today is kind of shifting in, you know, inflation is really, really driving up those prices. The poor trucking industry, I feel so bad for carriers and whatnot.
Yeah. And I mean, even it's funny to even consider when air freight in particular would get cheaper. I mean, it became a very easy way to move freight when none of us were allowed to be on planes, you know, like there's all this space. So it's unless we see like another crazy black swan event, I can't find a opportunity where air freight will like be as close to competitive as it is today. I mean, we're talking maybe in high investments in different types of fuels, but like, cool. Boy, yeah, it's not going to be competing anytime soon. But I will say, and like you said earlier, it's definitely, I think, more shielded and guarded. So to say we're not going to see a Goodfellas situation happen again, what? I would put somewhat behind that. What would be interesting too for the future is, you know, thinking of the Goodfellas situation, ports, right? Like how deceptive they are, right, as well. All that movement. Now I'm thinking of The Wire, if we're going to put into TV show. The Wire season 2, if you want to, if you're a shipper and you want to get a heart attack, learn about all the missing cargo gone there. And that will freak you out too. So, yeah, there's so many different, that's what's so cool. It's like we make supply chains so intense and so many different loops and so many different areas that freight can move to. It's great, right? It's an omni-fulfillment. It's a way to reach every consumer. But it's actually hurting us now because there's so many different areas that we can now be robbed while moving those goods. So, what a great episode, and what a great way to take pop culture and mix it in with the issues that we see today.
Right. I know. That's why I love this stuff. You know, this show is going to be focused on telling interesting stories that affect our world in the past, and, you know, that shaped our future. All right. So I will close up today with our fun fact of the day that I will be doing every episode. Did you know that Henry Hill was actually kicked out of the witness protection program? After he wrote the book, he got very, very talkative. So for security breaches, and he was still committing the crime, he was kicked out of the program. Thank you everyone for tuning in, and a big thank you to Grace for coming on and helping me tell this story. Thank you so much to the Mob Museum for answering all my phone calls and filling in the gaps. And tune in 2 weeks for our next episode on February 6th on Freight Waves TV. Or you can listen to the show wherever you get your podcast. I'm your host, Brielle J. Gull, and catch me next time.